أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا مولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين For the hastening of the reappearance of our beloved Imam, please recite aloud salawat. So that we may be among his true companions, his true followers, his true lovers, please recite aloud a salawat. First and foremost, as always, we'd like to thank Allah for giving us the opportunity to get together again on these blessed nights. We pray by the right of Amir al-Mu'mineen, by the right of the Imam of our time, all the hajat that everyone have do become accepted. This is the night to make all the du'as that you have in your mind, especially the du'a for the return of our beloved Imam, for the acceptance of all of those hajat. Please recite on loud salawat. We began our previous two sessions speaking about the problems that we face, and rather than highlighting those problems again, what I'd like to look towards is the du'a that you just heard being recited, du'a iftitah. If you look at the end of du'a iftitah, I'm just going to read the English translation of a few lines. O Allah, we complain to you about the departure of our Prophet. Your blessings be upon him and on his household. The absence of our leader, the big numbers of our enemies, the few number of us, and the widespread disorder. Something very similar to what we started with in the last two sessions that we've had. It's very important that we go into these sessions, I repeat, reminding ourselves of the problems that exist around us, of the difficult situation that we find ourselves in. So that when we do come to these programs, we try and look for what we can gain in order to actually help us in the resolution of these problems, as opposed to just coming, living in a bubble for a few hours and going back home. One of the lessons that we understood the holy month of Ramadan teaches us is the lesson of increasing our capacity to remain steadfast. Okay, we said how the holy month expects you not just to stay away from that which is haram, but it also expects you to be very careful towards that which is normally halal for you. That in itself teaches you discipline. That in itself teaches you self-control. That in itself builds the capacity within you to remain steadfast. Especially in relationship to the problems that we mentioned, we looked at Surah Ali Imran, verse 120, in which it says, Yet if you are patient and God-weary, their guile will not harm you in any way. Indeed, Allah encompasses what they do. And over here we said, the word that is used for sabr is patient. And we spoke about how this may not be the best translation. But why is this verse important? Because it tells us all of these problems that we've mentioned. If you are among those who ask Allah for help, if you are among those who are steadfast, the correct translation of sabr, then their scheming, their plans against you will not cause you any harm. And when we came across this verse, we decided that actually, maybe we do need to spend a bit more time on understanding what this sabr actually is. In conclusion, we realize that sabr is not the capacity to accept as much punishment as possible without showing any response. Generally, what the general understanding of patience is, how much can this person tolerate? How much oppression, how much suffering can this person tolerate without responding? Like, that's kind of seen as patience, but we said that's not actually sabr, that's more acceptance than anything else. We said sabr is the ability to remain steadfast upon your objectives regardless what difficulties are thrown at you. We changed it from something which pacifies you into something which is a source of motivation, something which keeps you standing regardless of how difficult the situation gets. We mentioned, to open up the understanding of what sabr is, we mentioned a tradition of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please recite salawat. In which Amir al-Mu'mineen says that sabr is of three types: remaining steadfast upon the commands of Allah, remaining steadfast in the face of sins, and remaining steadfast in the face of hardships. And we spent a brief time just looking at what these three are. We said this third type, remaining steadfast in the face of hardships, itself is split into two types. The first are those hardships and inflictions which you had no choice over. So for example, there's a natural disaster. You didn't press a button for that natural disaster to happen. You didn't choose it. It happened upon you, or illnesses, for example. How do you respond to those? The other type of hardships that one may face are those which you have chosen yourself. You know that if you decide to go on this particular path, on this particular journey, this path is full of difficulties, this path is full of trials and tribulations, but you're going to take it anyway. Okay? So these are the two types of hardships that you may come across. And we also said, inshallah, we want to be among those who consciously choose to go upon that journey which gets us to the divine objectives, even if it means that it is the most difficult one, even if it means that through this path we're going to face the most amount of danger. And we spoke about the dangers on this path. At least we hinted towards it. Well, what's very important for us to recognize is that it's within the nature of this path to face difficulties. It's not like you can be on this path and trials and tribulations won't follow. There's a saying that they have in Farsi. It's a beautiful saying. It says, it's a rough translation: if you do not have a heart of a lion, do not go on the journey of love. Okay? This is in reality the truth of the journey of love. You cannot get to the divine objectives through a path which does not trial and test you to see whether you're even worthy for those objectives. There's a beautiful saying of Ayatollah Jawadi Amili, in which he says, every night we should pray that Allah makes us a part of the divine movement as it reaches the divine objectives. We do not want to be among those who sit on the side and see the divine movement becoming successful while we're just chilling, right? That's not who we want to be. By staying away from the pleasures of life, what the holy month of Ramadan teaches us through that lesson of steadfastness is an introduction to such a journey. It's like the first step to such a life. Remember, in the holy month of Ramadan, okay, we don't have a choice. If we don't do this, then, for example, we have the fear of hell, right? We're going to go into the fire, so like, you better fast, right? But this is just a taste. The whole point of this is that you use the will and determination that grows within you during this month to remain steadfast upon those three things: the commands of Allah, in the face of sins, and when facing trials and tribulations for the rest of the year. That's the whole purpose of this month. It's a training ground for you. It's a starting point for you to be able to stay steadfast for the rest of the year. And the last thing that we mentioned was the fact that one of the biggest reasons why we do not remain steadfast is because of the pursuit of comforts. Okay. We're after comforts. And just like I mentioned in regards to steadfastness, like the whole point of these talks was not to focus on steadfastness. That was supposed to be one of the things that we learned from the holy month of Ramadan, but I felt like it was injustice just like mentioning it and moving on. Same thing, I mentioned this yesterday, that okay, one of the problems with remaining steadfast is when you start pursuing comfort. And I kind of just, you know, went on from there. I realized that, no, actually we need to pause and we actually need to open up what that actually means and how that shows itself within our life as well. So hopefully in the time that I've been given today, and I realized there was an emphasis on short speech as I was being introduced, so I'll be very careful. I will do my best to mention some points which hopefully will be good takeaways for us in regards to at least trying to remain steadfast for the rest of the year after this month, this holy month is over for us. Please recite a salawat. So just linking this to the discussion so far, if you are in the pursuit of comforts, very simply, I don't need to explain this further because as I said, we mentioned this. If you're in the pursuit of comforts, then you are stepping away from the path of the Ahlul Bayt. You are stepping away from the path of the lovers of the Ahlul Bayt. We mentioned that there was a story when a person came to Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, please recite salawat. In which he expressed his love to the Imam, and the Imam responded not by saying, oh, thank you, I love you too. Rather, he said, are you sure? In shock, again, this person said, yes, I love you. And again, the response he got from the Imam was, okay, then be ready to face hardships. Be ready to face trials and tribulations. What does that mean? That means it's the nature of this path. If you want to be a lover of the Ahlul Bayt, it's the nature of this path that you will be taken out of your comfort zone. So if you're in the pursuit of comforts, the first problem that you'll have is you'll have to accept not being in the line of the Ahlul Bayt. The second issue with pursuing comfort, and again we mentioned this yesterday, was another story with our sixth Imam when he was addressing his companions. He said to them, he kind of told them off, said, do not wish for that which is impossible. And they said, you know, who wishes for that which is impossible? And the Imam said, you do. And they said, how? And he said, do you not wish for comfort in this world? And they said, yes. He said, comfort is impossible for the believer to secure in this world. Right? How much more emphasis do we need? That if you want to be on this path, if you want to be on the path of the Ahlul Bayt, then comfort is not something that you need, that you should be pursuing. It should not be one of your objectives. If you remember, on the first night, we mentioned some quotes from Nahjul Balagha, in which we looked at how the Imam was addressing the people who had let him down. Right? Here's another one of those quotes. The excuses are amiss like that of a debtor unwilling to pay. The ignoble cannot ward off oppression. Right cannot be achieved without effort. Right cannot be achieved without effort. If you think you can be on this path and you like sloganeering about the objectives that this path is supposed to achieve, but you think it can happen by remaining in your comfort zone, you think it can happen without any effort from your side, you're mistaken. Which is the house besides this one to protect? This is Imam speaking to the people. And with which leader would you go for fighting after me? Something to think about. These are questions for us right now. If we decide to pursue a life of comfort, if we decide to not go on the path of the Ahlul Bayt and the lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, then where will you go? Which other house would you be willing to fight for? Which other imam after our ma'asumeen would you be willing to sacrifice for? If you're not doing it for them, I mean, you're wasting your time, full stop. And when you look at the divine symbols of the divine movement throughout history, from the first prophet to the last, from the first infallible Imam to the last one. If you look at Lady Zahra salamu alayha and other examples that we have, please recite salawat. And if you look at those who are seen as the representatives of the divine symbols of the movement, who in their own rights have become symbols themselves, right? You see countless stories from them, which show how they, even though they have every ability to not be in discomfort, they still choose to do it. They don't run away from discomfort. In fact, with these stories, like, you see that they sometimes pursue discomfort. And if you want to start from Amir al-Mu'mineen, you know, why does the Khalif of the Muslims at that time need to go out at night and feed the homeless with his own hands? Why does a personality like that need to go and feed the orphans? He doesn't need to do that. He can easily just send 3 or 4 people and ask them to do it. Why does he need to do that? It's to give us a lesson, right? Do not run away from discomfort. Get out of your comfort zone. Put in some effort. There is hikmah behind that. You look at the stories that you hear of Imam Khomeini. After the revolution was successful, the place where he decided to live was a small village in northern Tehran by the name of Jamaran. When you go there, I remember the first time I went there, I was standing there and they're like, okay, we're going to visit the house of Imam Khomeini where he stayed after the revolution. So we're like, okay. So standing over there and looking around, it's like, okay, where's the house? It's like, this is the house. It's like, what do you mean this is the house? Like, we're talking about Imam Khomeini, right? It's like, no, this is the house. It's like, no, you said to us that this is the, you know, the Husseiniya where he would give his speeches in. And this looks like the back room of that Husseiniya where, you know, a person just rests and chills until it's time for them to speak and stuff. It's like, no, this is the house. For those people who have not experienced that, go and experience it. See which simplicity this person lived in. He could have had any house or mansion or whatever he wanted after the revolution. The amount of love people have, sincere love people have, in which they would have sincerely given him whatever he asked for. But he stayed over there. Not only did he stay in that very simple, humble place, he refused to stay there unless the person who that house belonged to would accept taking rent from him. So the leader of the Islamic Revolution, the father of the revolution, after the revolution's taken place, where he could have anything, decides to live in such a place, and he also pays rent for it. Like, these are who our symbols are. There are 100 other paths he could have taken, which was so much easier. But he went down this route. There's a story that I heard from someone who used to work inside the offices of the leader in Tehran. And he said that there was this one day where it was very cold. It was exceptionally cold. And the security team, there were 3 or 4 of them, were standing outside whilst Atullah Khamenei was inside and, you know, he was doing whatever work needed to be done. And he saw, like, he felt that, okay, it's cold outside, you know, the team, they're going to be quite cold as well. So he went out and he asked them how they were. And he said to them, would you like some tea? And, you know, first, as Iranians do, they said no about 5 times and then, you know, they agreed to it. Ayatollah Khamenei goes back in. After about 5-10 minutes, they see that the door that Khamenei has just gone in from, it opens slightly and then it closes. And then they see it opens again and then it closes. And they're like trying to figure out what's happening, right? And they can hear like, you know, they can hear like glass, noises of like glasses and stuff, and they're trying to figure out what's happening, right? As you guys know, Ayatollah Khamenei, he's disabled from one side of his body. When one of the security guards, he went to open the door, he realized that Ayatollah Khamenei himself had bought tea for them, And he was trying to open the door. And he couldn't. He could have easily have asked anyone else to go and get them tea. Very small example. But no, like, he went and made the effort himself. Why? What is the wisdom behind that? There's a lot we can gain from not pursuing the most comfortable option. And we know about the simplicity that he lives in. There was a documentary maker who said that we wanted to make a documentary about the day-to-day life of Ayatollah Khamenei, but one of his closest advisors said, you know, refused to give them the permission. And they asked why. He goes, because no one will believe the simplicity that he lives in. So he just left it at that. This is who, these are who our leaders are. There's so many stories of the shuhada, so many stories of the shuhada where you have high-ranking officers waiting for their foot soldiers to go to sleep and then taking their boots and then cleaning them. Why? They really don't need to do that. In fact, they can use dirty boots as an excuse to discipline their soldiers, but no, they used to do it with their own hands. And then they would still wake up for Salatul Layl. So much discomfort. Why? There's a very famous story about a person called Shahid Zain al-Din. Shahid Zain al-Din was the commander of the battalion from the holy city of Qom. And one of the things he was known for was resolving problems. Whenever they had problems when it came to, you know, strategy or whatever, logistics or whatever, he was known to solve their problems. And people couldn't figure out, you know, what was it that would give him this ability to just find solutions out of nowhere. There's one very famous story about him. So imagine you have to feed a whole unit, right? Now, that takes a lot of big dishes and, you know, the smaller trays or whatever they would use at that time. Now, the kitchen staff would come in the morning. They would make the food in the kitchen. They would give it out and leave. The soldiers would come. They would eat the food. And then they would, you know, leave the dishes and the trays and stuff there. When the kitchen staff would come in the morning, they would see that all the, you know, the dishes and trays and stuff are ready. They would think that the soldiers are cleaning all the dishes and stuff. And the soldiers thought that the kitchen staff is doing it. One day, one of the chefs, one of the people who used to help out making the food, he was sick, so he couldn't go home that day. So instead of going home, he had to stay in the barracks at that time. He thought to himself, like, oh, these soldiers, they're so helpful. You know, every night they wash the dishes and stuff for us as well. I want to go and see, like, them doing it, and I want to say thank you to them. So he gets out of his bed. He goes towards the kitchen. He can hear, like, okay, someone's, like, cleaning the dishes and stuff. And he goes and he sees that the commander of the unit, Shahid Zain al-Din, by himself, was there cleaning all the dishes. Whenever these people came across problems or issues that they had, they would throw themselves in discomfort. Why? Because they saw the path towards guidance as being cleanliness of themselves. When they would purify themselves, they would get their guidance. And that purification, they understood, could not happen if you are always choosing the easier option, if you are always going after comfort. So they would put themselves in discomfort. They would take themselves out of their comfort zone. They would do whatever possible to fight against their nafs. You will have heard of Shahid Mohsen Hojjaji, I'm sure, who became Shahid recently. Mohsen Hojjaji was something very different. The way he was able to enter into the hearts of the ordinary people en masse in the Islamic Republic and beyond is a miracle in itself. This person wasn't a general or a commander or anything like that. He was a simple foot soldier who went to the battlefield. He's not the only one who's been tortured and so on and so forth. One of the reasons why there was such a delay after his body came back for the funeral to happen is because they had problems identifying him. Because the whole body was burnt. Firstly, they didn't get the whole body back. What they got back was burnt. It was cut to pieces. Right? And they had to carry out DNA tests to make sure that it's actually his body. But when Ayatollah Khamenei speaks about Mohsen Hujjaji to his family, he says that, you know, we have many shuhada who have been beheaded. We have many shuhada who have been tortured, even burnt. But there was something about your son that Allah decided to make him the flag bearer of all of the headless shuhada. What was that something? Very luckily, I came across an interview that this sheikh was giving on TV, who had the opportunity to know Mohsen Hujjaji before, you know, he became this famous. And the person who was interviewing him said to him, you know, in your opinion, why did he become so famous? And the sheikh said, I used to think about this a lot as well. And then I remembered a story about him, which made me realize, okay, it makes sense now that the whole world gets to know who this foot soldier is. He said, I used to give 10 days of lectures for the holy month of Muharram, the first 10 days. And in those 10 days, there would be this young person who would come. He would be the first person to be there. We wouldn't see him throughout the whole program, and then he would be the last person to leave. And you could tell, okay, this person's done a lot of work. And I asked the person who was head of the organization, who is this volunteer of yours? There's something different about him. And he told him, you know, that's a good question. You know, he's new, and we usually interview all of our volunteers. So we called him for an interview. And as soon as he walked in, we realized, okay, you know, this person, there's something about him, like we want him to be with us. In that interview, rather than us telling him, you know, rules, conditions, and so on and so forth, he placed two conditions on us. He said, I want to volunteer for you, but on two conditions. One, you let me do the most difficult tasks, which no one else likes to do. And secondly, I want to do them in an area where as less people as possible see me. When the sheikh heard this, that, you know, the organizer tells him, he says, okay, no wonder, like, there's something special about him. I need to, you know, go to him and say thank you or something, like, to show our appreciation for this. And he says it was like the 8th night or the 9th night where I managed to grab him just as he was leaving. And I said to him, you know, as they say in Farsi, waqian khaste naboshi, right? Which translates something into, you know, if you want to be exact, like, really, like, don't get tired. It's a way of basically saying stay motivated, stay fresh, keep working. And he said this youth looked at me and he said something which shook me to my core. He said to me, tiredness is nothing. We need to give our heads for Imam Hussein. We need to sacrifice everything we have for Imam Hussein. He said this and he left. He goes, after a while, I started seeing these pictures come out of the Shaheed. I'm like, where do I know this face from? And I realized that this face was the face of that volunteer who used to come. And he said, I realized something that day. If you have sincerity and you wish to hide behind the curtain for the sake of Imam Hussein, then there'll be a time where Imam Hussein will take away those curtains and he'll introduce you to the rest of the world. That's what happened to him. But how did he get there? How did he get there? He did not choose the comfortable path. He chose the path of discomfort. He could have been just a normal volunteer at a program, if anything, right? But no, he went even further. He wanted to know what is the most difficult thing he can do at that time for the sake of Imam Hussein in the most sincere way possible. That's what got him where he was. They started releasing excerpts from his diary. On one of the pages, it says that So this is his own writing. He says, I was on the way home and I decided to, for the sake of making the heart of the Imam of the time happy, when I get home, I'm going to kiss the hands of my mother and father. He says, when I got home, I was standing outside the door and I said to myself, what is wrong with you? Why are you putting so much pressure on yourself? Who in this day and age still kisses the hands of their mums and, you know, dads, right? Just let it be. But then I thought to myself, no, you said to the Imam that you're going to do this to make him happy, to make his heart happy, then you're going to do it. He said his mom opened the door. He kissed the hands of his mother, and then he went to his father and he kissed the hands of his father. And after that, he writes, I'm not going to go into the details because this in itself like requires an explanation. After that, he writes, like, I was, after doing this act, I was awaiting for the reward, you know, because I said I want to make the Imam happy. And the next line after he writes that, he says, and how quickly that reward came. That night I saw a dream in which my mother gave me the shirt I would wear for the majalises of Imam Hussein and told me about my shahada. Like, gave me the news of my shahada. Again, how did he do that? Right? Okay, if it's not volunteering at a program and, you know, putting yourself in that much hardship, what is it that you may be uncomfortable with right now? What can you do right now, the little things, for the sake of making the heart of the Imam happy? Right now, what can you do? What discomfort can you bring upon yourself right now that can help you in attaining that proximity to the Imam? Please recite salawat. So these people are our role models, right? If they got comfortable, they would begin to worry. Majority of the people that I see in the crowd right now, they've read the book of Shaheed Ibrahim Hadi. There's a very funny story inside it in which when he was injured, he was sent to one of the villages to help out. Just like, you know, carrying out day-to-day stuff, helping the people wherever they needed it. And he was on his crutches. And there's a story in there which says that one day we saw Ibrahim Hadi going from one shop to the other shop on his crutches, looking really worried. He would go from one house to the other house. He would check the fruit sellers, like, is everything okay? And someone stopped him and said, what's wrong with you? Like, calm down, right? And why was he worried? Because he said that by Dhuhr, Allah has usually given us the tawfiq to be able to help at least one or two people out. However, today, it's, you know, very close to Dhuhr time, but we haven't received anyone who needs help. So he, being in that state he was, what did he do? Did he just sit down, chill in his office, say, thank God, you know, I can relax today, I don't have to do work? Or no, he went out of his way, went out of his comfort zone and tried to look for who he could help, right? These are our role models. And it's through taking the lessons of staying away from comfort that will help us be more steadfast. Remember, steadfast upon the commands of Allah. Steadfast in the face of sins and steadfast in the face of hardships. It's these stories, these role models that are going to help us. Ayatollah Behjat said, a lot of us are always looking for a spiritual teacher. If only we could find a spiritual teacher who could take our hand and move us forward. Ayatollah Behjat said, reading the stories of the awliya of Allah is one of the best forms of dars al-akhlaq. So like the lessons of akhlaq that you can have. Something that we can really take away from this. And look, think about it on an individual level as well, right? We all know what makes us uncomfortable. We all know the strengths we have and the weaknesses we have. One of the most discomforting things is to try and fight against your weaknesses and try to get rid of them. It's not easy to try and work harder on the things you're good at and to strengthen them. But at the end of the day, if you want to belong to this path, you have to try and work on those things. You have to try and get out of your comfort zone and work towards achieving that. There's a very beautiful quote from Imam Khomeini. I hinted towards something like this yesterday, but he says, "The situation of our nation today is better in every aspect than that of the situation at the time of the messenger. During that time, they did not even have anything to eat. Someone who would go to war would have to take one date, which was then passed from one person to the other. This is how Islam got to us. And Islam, which got to us with so many sacrifices, is not going to survive with us if we're not willing to make any. The next generation after us is not going to get that Islam that the Prophet had, because that Islam requires those sacrifices." It's been narrated again from Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam. Please recite salawat. He was asked, "What is the path to comfort?" And he said, "It is through going against your nafs." Then he said, "Okay, when does a person who fights against their nafs reach comfort?" And the Imam responded by saying, "The first day they enter heaven." What are you looking for in this world? Comfort does not exist in this world, especially, as we've mentioned, if you're on this path. If you look at Surah Balad, verse number 4, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي كَبَدْ. We created man in tribulation. If you look at the tafsir of Makarim Shirazi, underneath this, he says, if you see someone in apparent ease or comfort, you either have not done enough research to understand what discomfort they're in, or this comfort that they have is temporary and it's going to leave them soon. You know, so we can't buy into this idea that religion is here to give us comfort in this world and then we get to chill in the afterlife as well. That's not what religion is here to do. Religion is here to give you contentment, not comfort. Right? It's not here to just put a smile on your face so apparently you look happy. Religion is here to give you that contentment of the heart, the real fix. And if you look at the lives of the Prophet, you look at the lives of the Ahlul Bayt, you look at the lives of the Shuhada, you look at the lives of all of those who have successfully tread upon this path, where do you see apparent comfort? What you do see is contentment. You see so much contentment, in fact, that when you speak about them, you become stronger and more steadfast upon the path, upon the divine objectives and stuff. They give you contentment. That's what we're after. Please recite salawat. Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi says in this discussion that if someone pursues comfort, then whenever they come across some choices, they will always choose the option, or they will always choose the people that they think can provide them the most comfort. You know, as a result, you don't remain steadfast upon your principles. You want to go for comfort? Well, sometimes that's going to conflict with what your principles are. You have to remain steadfast on your principles. I mean, I know people in the different communities that I've visited, lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, like, in which they are forced to stay away from socio-political issues, especially when it comes to Zionism. Don't say anything about these things. Don't say anything about the establishment. Don't say anything about Zionism. Why? Because you have to worry about your studies. You have to worry about your job. You have to worry about your career. Hang on a second. We've just said if you want to be on this path, then comfort is not something that you need to be pursuing. You have to be steadfast on your principles. And like, especially when it comes to the issue of Zionism, we're entering the last few days of the holy month of Ramadan. We have the day of Al-Quds upon us this Sunday. And it's like one of the, in fact, Ayatollah Khamenei himself says this, like they keep asking us to leave this issue behind. Like, stop talking about this issue. You're doing nothing. Yes, be against it, but just don't do anything or say anything. Why? Because it's going to bring discomfort to you. It's going to bring hardships upon you. Right? This is just not the path that we belong to. You know, we as individuals have every right to oppose injustice. We as Muslims have a responsibility and a duty to stand up against the oppressors. And as we have been taught, when it comes to the father of the revolution, starting from Imam Khomeini, to the leader of the revolution right now, to all the symbols of the resistance, to every single one of the respected maraji, they have all said it is our duty and responsibility as the lovers of the Ahlul Bayt to stand against the Zionist regime, to stand for the people of Palestine. That's the path that we belong to. And we will use our prayers. We have the du'as and a'mal for tonight. We will use our du'as specifically and very directly to take down the Zionist regime and to stand up for the Palestinians. We'll use our pulpits, we'll use our sermons, we'll use all our seminars, not just vaguely to speak against the oppressors and stand up for the oppressed. We'll use all of these mediums to specifically and very, very explicitly to speak against the Zionist regime and to stand up for the Palestinians. And no one is going to stop us from doing this. We're not going, this is one red line which we will not compromise on. If you're going to learn steadfastness from the holy month of Ramadan, okay, let's take it now to the real issues that the Islamic Ummah is facing right now. The very least of that, the very least, not the most, please don't treat Al-Quds Day as the most that you can do for the cause. No. The very least that you do is show your numbers and strength on the Day of Quds. That's the bare minimum expectation from us. As the lovers of the Ahl Bayt, there's an expectation of us to do this. If you want to remain steadfast, if you want to stay away from pursuing comforts, you become successful like the Islamic movement of Nigeria. Brother Zakaria, before the before my talk, he mentioned that there is a project that we're running to help fundraise for the Islamic movement. I just wanted to say, I just feel it's a shame if I don't mention this before leaving. Like, you have to understand what this movement is. You know, in one generation, to have more than 10 million, and I'm being conservative, more than 10 million people becoming the followers of the Ahlul Bayt is not a joke. How did that happen? There's so many things that we can kind of turn towards. But one of the most important points I wanted to mention, which links towards what we've been speaking about, is Sheikh Zakzaki never asked his people to do anything, to face any difficulty or hardship that he had not faced himself already, or that he was not willing to face himself already. If you want to create a community in which people are willing to make sacrifices, that are willing to take the path of discomfort, you have to be in a position where you're willing to do that yourself. There's a very famous story of how, as you guys know, there's an organization called Shaheed Foundation in Pakistan where they look after the families of the Shuhada. In Nigeria, they have the same thing. They wanted to start this foundation to help the families of the Shuhada. And they went to Sheikh Zakzaki and presented this idea. Initially, he refused. He's like, no, like, hold back on this. Everyone was like, why it's such a good idea. They're so successful. They're able to, you know, help out. And he said, no. He spent the next 2 weeks going around the houses of the shuhada, picking out children who he took the responsibility of bringing up once he himself began sacrificing and taking away from his comfort to help the families of the shuhada. Then he made the announcement, okay, we're going to establish an organization in which we're going to help the families of the shuhada. This is the path that we belong to. He had 7 sons. Now he has 1 left. 6 have become shaheed on this path. There's a very quick story because we're in the month of Ramadan. A person goes for iftar. And the person who actually carried out this research on the Islamic movement of Nigeria, he told me this himself. He says, we went to iftar and we were excited because we were told this is one of the most wealthiest people in the Islamic movement of Nigeria. So we thought, oh, nice, we're going to get this huge, you know, go to a mansion, have this big iftar, enjoy ourselves. The address that he was given was in the poorest part of the poorest village where the lovers of the Ahlul Bayt are. And he was slightly confused. He goes there and he goes to this house, this small house where there's no carpet. And this village was so poor that there are no water pipes that are connected to it. So they had this huge tanker, which the government would now and again come and refill. And that would be the source of water for everyone. This individual, he could be in so much comfort. But he took upon that discomfort for himself. What would he do? He had taken responsibility for being the source of food for 40 households in that village. He would take the bare minimum of water that he needed and he would use the rest. He used the rest of his money to have tankers, which he himself would fill up and then give to the rest of the village. Right? That's the path that we want to belong to. Not the path of comfort. Why? Because as we said, comfort would take you towards having a weaker will when it comes to remaining steadfast. Right? And this movement, which has become such an inspiration for every single one of us, the biggest Arba'een procession after Karbala happens every year in Nigeria. In Karbala, you walk for 80 kilometers. In Nigeria, they walk for over 200 kilometers. There's so much inspiration to be taken from them. And now they are genuinely in need of our help. These are not people who would come to you and like beg for donations. In fact, it's a shame from our side if they're having to do that. We should be there to provide for them before they even need to ask, because they've given us something which is so much more valuable. And inshallah, through this project that AIM is running, we can do something. Again, the bare minimum. Remember them in your du'as. Remember the Palestinians in your du'as and all the other oppressed that are there, especially on this night. This is where it matters. Giving as well matters on this night. This is your chance to do it. And hopefully we can make the best of that situation. I finish with the verse that we began with. Surah Ali Imran, verse 120. Yet if you have sabr and have taqwa, their schemes will not harm you. If you have sabr with the meaning that we've understood, steadfastness, then they're not going to harm you. But we went further than that. Surah A'raf, turn to Allah for help and have sabr. The earth indeed belongs to Allah and He gives its inheritance to whomever He wishes of His servants. And the outcome will be in the favor of those who have taqwa. Not only are you protected if you are steadfast, but you will also be victorious. So do not come and tell us to compromise and not be steadfast, because the path towards remaining secure, the path towards victory, is the path where we do remain steadfast. Please recite salawat.